Welcome to the Subtle Reformation Podcast. We're so glad that you can join us. I'm one of the hosts, Ben.
And I'm Stephen. And we're really glad that you've joined us to listen to us muse about formation and what it means for who and how we can be in this world.
Well, good morning, Stephen. How are you doing this morning?
Yeah, great, mate. It is a balmy 17 degrees in the middle of a Melbourne autumn.
Wow.
7 in the morning. I don't know what is... Well, I know what's going on. It's typical Melbourne.
Yeah, that's very typical.
She's all class.
Freezing one day, moderately warm the next, and then who knows what will happen after that.
Well, there's a very... Rob Gell, he was still is a meteorologist, was on Channel 10 for years. And he said most people think that Melbourne is on the southeastern corner of a continent. He said most people don't realise that Melbourne is on the northwestern edge of the Antarctic.
that's a good distinction.
Yeah, so it's a city that is wedged between the Antarctic, but then also a desert. And then it's a city surrounded by a ring of mountains as well. And he said they just make for, you know, spectacularly unpredictable climactic conditions. So ever since I heard him say that, I'm like, yeah, I get that. That makes sense.
Yeah, it does. It's a definitely a more helpful perspective, isn't it?
Mm. And then, of course, I don't know if you ever got to the museum in Melbourne, the Wurundjeri section, the indigenous people. And do you remember when you sort of walk near that little waterfall there? They've actually got 7 seasons of Melbourne.
Yeah, I remember my mum telling me about that Melbourne has 7 seasons and not 4, you know, for the indigenous people. And I was like, well, actually, that also does make a bit more sense. There's definitely more than 4 seasons in Melbourne.
Yeah, because the craziness is when you take a Northern European 4 seasons in 1 year framework and then impose that everywhere you go, assuming that life is wherever you are, it's like Northern Europe.
Yeah. No, that's very interesting. Well, it's good to hear that it's warm for a bit today.
Get
a
bit of a different until experience. At least 9 o'clock. I'll bring you later and I'll let you know how we're going after that.
Yeah. No, very good. Very good. Well, today it would be great to dive into this topic that I know has been on a few people's minds, mine in particular, as well. And it kind of works really well when you think about the context we're in. It's about this kind of, how do we do discipleship while we are kind of experiencing life digitally at the moment? And I guess what I mean by that is that we're not really connecting face to face the same way. You know, obviously we're connecting right now online from different states. And for all of us, basically our experience is connecting with our coworkers online, connecting with those we have relationship with online, connecting, you know, for me in ministry with those I'm discipling online. And you just don't quite get that same, I don't know, discipleship experience. I think one of my favorite quotes around this idea of discipleship is it's like one person's life rubbing off on another person's life, in that sort of sense of, you know, our sharp edges rub off on each other and it helps refine us and shape us. So I guess the question is, what do you think it looks like for us to try and do discipleship when we're kind of separated and having to try and do it digitally? It's just a very different experience is what I'm finding.
I think when we initially started getting some questions from people that you work with and we started compiling this list, this one was the one that I thought, I'm not sure I have a whole lot to say to this one. If anything, I was really keen to hear the sort of things that you had to say. I think the short version is I don't know, but I've got a few hunches.
Yeah.
I thought, and I just wanted to be really honest with, you know, whoever might be listening to this. This is not necessarily, hey kids, this is what you should do at home, as opposed to, look, I don't know. Here's what I've experienced and what I've understood. And let's see if we might not be able to sort of draw some connections.
Yeah. And I think that's what it is at the moment. I feel like everyone's kind of just going with some hunches. They're like, I don't exactly know, but yeah, I'm with you. I think it would be good to discuss this and see if there are some connections or some thoughts that might be helpful during this time?
So probably the first thing I was thinking about in relation to this subject is, so you and I, years ago, we did a formation subject together.
Yeah.
And I think, was it yesterday or the day before? Is there someone drilling at your end? It sounds like
There's someone drilling at the apartment next door. It's brilliant.
What a fantastic guess.
I know, at like 6:50 in the morning, they're just going to work on the power tools. No worries.
I remember I walked into a cafe once and I said, are you cooking with cumin in the kitchen? And they were like, that is amazing. We just put a pinch of cumin into a scrambled egg. How can you do that? And I said, I'm a wog. So we did this formation subject and we were chatting about this, you and I, prior to the previous episode, before we started recording. We were talking about this really bizarre experience where, okay, I'm a theological college student and,
yeah,
you know, there's my Greek subject. There's my, there's my hermeneutics subject. Formation, what is that? Oh, that must be the really easy subject.
Yeah, the bludge subject.
The bludge subject. And then you drive to a retreat center and you walk into a room with anywhere between 10 and 100 people, depending on how many students are doing formation that year. For those of you listening, Ben's kind of wide-eyed and nodding at the other end going, yes, you're darn tootin'. This is what happened. You don't know anyone there. You might know one or two people. And then you're informed that over the next 3 days, you will be put in an arbitrary group with a bunch of strangers. You've got to then tell your life's story. And if you're unfortunate enough to be in my group, I go first and I tell my story without any, holding no cards to my chest, pulling no punches. And then it's your turn to tell your story. And if I think you're holding something back, or if I think you're trying to put a positive spin on something, I will actually ask you directly, what's going on
there? Yeah.
Why do you feel it's important to, put this particular spin on this part of your story? Or, are you really telling us everything? Is there something else going on here?
Yeah.
So interestingly, this year I'm teaching a formation subject for that theological college.
Mm-hmm.
And we were able to get the retreat in before lockdown.
Yeah.
So, we had that very surreal experience, meeting a bunch of strangers and sharing some really intimate parts of your life with strangers. So all of the, the emotional ups and downs that occur. But then a couple of weeks after that, all of a sudden we found that we were in lockdown. So our first meeting was, we had to do it using Zoom. And I was thinking, is this going to work?
Yeah, it's such a different experience.
Yeah. And, I mean, there were the mechanical dimensions, when you're not in the same room, if someone sort of leans forward slightly, that they might have something to say and they might be asking a question or they might wanting to be making a contribution. It's difficult to tell using Zoom. I think I dropped out twice.
Yeah.
And that's where I learned immediately make somebody a co-host when you start a meeting. But I checked in with everybody at the end. We just, that first meeting was a half day meeting. So we were together for about 4 hours and I checked in and I said, look, how's everybody going? And they said, there were the usual kind of, it was a bit awkward. It was a bit difficult, but there was this really interesting, reflection when you're sitting in a circle, talking. If you start talking, everybody's head swivels towards you. So as the person speaking, you see all of the eyes upon you. Mm. But as the person listening, I'm just looking at you. I'm not looking at everybody else. But using something like Zoom or one of the other technologies, you see everyone's face all the time.
Yeah.
And these guys, so my group's all guys this year, these guys were talking about that they felt a level of intimacy that they hadn't before, those who had done formation before. Yeah.
Really?
So,
wow.
Yes. So For those of you who are listening and not seeing Ben's face, the eyebrows shot up.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I found that as well. And then when I was touching bases with the coordinators of the subject, we found that that was actually an experience across the board. And then with that in mind, because I'm an interim pastor at a Baptist church at the moment, and I'm responsible for all of their, so we do a pre-recorded thing rather than a live thing on the Sunday. It's too much stress for an organization without that degree of resource. And I found that that sort of sense of being able to see everybody has, because it's like it is an unprecedented experience, saying something or listening to somebody talk and then seeing everybody's reaction at the same time in real time.
Yeah.
So I haven't had a whole lot of time to really think that through and to think about what that means in terms of our interactions with one another. You've known me for a long time. As people who are listening to this podcast know, I've got some very outspoken views when it comes to our relationship to our economics.
Yeah.
And the way in which consumerism and capitalism influence our spirituality. And this is not a criticism. It is just an out-and-out observation. Most of what we do in church is in the mode of consumption. It is one to many, the speaker to the congregation, the band to the congregation, and so forth. So it represents and it reflects an audience, like a content creator, a content consumer model, mm-hmm. whether we like it or not. You know, if you're offended by that, if you can move past the offense, that's actually what's happening. But for the first time for many of us, it's kind of like everybody is now in the spotlight when you're using Zoom. It's kind of breaking down and democratizing that experience somewhat. And this is just me thinking out loud.
Yeah.
I haven't had a chance to think about it before.
It's a good thought.
Yeah. Over to you, mate. I was pretty much going to say that was my first thought, but
yeah. No, it's an interesting reflection because I'm thinking about, you know, my wife and I lead a couple of small groups, you know, of young adults and, you know, stuff like that. And it's been interesting you saying that the democratizing of, for me, it would even be like the airtime in the group. Like those people who talk a lot, while they're still potentially more prominent voice in our small group, I've noticed that it's a little bit more open. Partly because people are, I guess, they feel this sense of, I can see everyone and I don't want to be the person that's always, you know, talking and interjecting and I guess even this kind of experience of, I don't want to talk at the same time as someone else. So there's like this hesitation, but it's been easier for Rachel and I, now that we've got our head around it, to be able to actually call out the different voices, because instead of us, you know, in a live setting normally going, so what do people think? And, you know, the extroverted, confident people just jumping in straight away, we're actually able to almost intentionally go, who are the voices that we don't feel like we get to hear from often that we can now actually invite to share and speak? And so that is an interesting, I guess, reflection on it. Because now that you've said it, I can see it in our group that I feel like I'm connecting with some of our members, I don't know what group, attendees or whatever you want to call it, more intentionally than we were before. And that's something that I wouldn't have thought of about with online sort of stuff, but there's a sense of, I guess, communal engagement in a different way.
And you do realize as the host of the meeting, you can turn people's microphones off. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Well, all being with young adults, they're used to like sitting in all of these uni lectures. And so they're muted all the time. So it's actually trying to get them to like unmute themselves is the key.
Yeah. I mean, it's almost insignificant, but I actually find it's quite significant. Again, if you're in a group setting, because I mean, what's supposed to happen, I think, I can feel a tangent coming on, Ben. Because when we use a phrase like the early church, or when we read an epistle, when we read, you know, one of the early church documents in the New Testament, without realizing, we just assume it was a stage and everybody was sitting in rows facing the front. But those communities weren't like that. They were sitting in a circle. You know, they were meeting in the meeting room in people's homes. So this idea of rows facing the front, that's only a very new development. And so theoretically, what's supposed to happen when we come together for discipleship and formation is we are sitting in a circle and we are all facing each other. Mm. But for centuries, you know, the moment you start talking, everyone, you know, all of the faces swivel towards you.
Yeah.
You can only look at one person at a time.
Mm.
But now, as the speaker, you can look at everybody at the same time. And what might happen is if you start talking and I'm like, oh, there goes Ben waffling on again like he normally does, and I do my little eye roll, I can do my little eye roll while you as the speaker are looking at somebody else. And I can make sure that by the time your eyes swivel to my face, I've got my face under control. You can't change that behavior overnight. And I've seen it in groups when I'm, you know, classes that I'm teaching. Somebody starts and somebody's rolling their eyes and I'm like, hey, buddy, they can see you. Look, everybody can see you. So I wonder whether, you know, those people who have never been checked, those people who will just talk and continue to talk and dominate a group, who have never really been checked, because normally that stuff sorts itself out in kindergarten, you know, when the kids are playing in kindergarten. And you start to get a sense of how social interactions work in this particular culture. So I have, like I said, it's a little thing, but I have noticed, someone who would traditionally dominate a group, they're getting the feedback right away, and it's like,
And they're not missing it.
And you could see them sort of, it's almost like whatever thought they had that they were trying to communicate, that continues on autopilot, but you can actually see them thinking at the same time, oh my, what am I doing wrong? What's happening?
Everyone's disengaged. I can see everyone's just picked up their phone. Like...
So whilst there are some limitations, there's some new territory around this sort of stuff. But the other comment I wanted to make about that was, I wonder what would have happened if we had to start that subject in lockdown. And I've had, because of the way that, that particular theological college operates, I know that a few years ago they started with running formation groups. So there are some students who study with ACOM remotely from, from Malaysia or from, from India, and they can't make a weekly or a monthly formation meeting. And I know that a few years ago they tried using Skype, if only we knew to get some stock in Zoom before its share price went through the roof.
Yeah, tell me about it.
But I remember them talking about, trialing a group in that way, actually starting a group without face-to-face and being a virtual group the whole time, and being somewhat skeptical about that. I'm finding myself now going back to those conversations, trying to hear them again and wondering whether it actually is possible to because, you know, we're talking about trying to develop a sense of intimacy through, you know, even though we aren't in the same room together.
Yeah.
But, you know, there are people who've managed to pull off long distance romances using technology. But again, often they start in real life. And so the technology becomes something that augments an existing reality rather than the virtual being the entirety of the experience. So that's my first thought.
I do think, I wonder about that point, whether there is a little bit of an age factor in that. I wonder if, you know, for me, particularly working with under 18s as kind of a focus point for my ministry, is a lot of them have been growing up around this sort of stuff. And, you know, we hear all that stuff, digital natives, all that. But I remember watching a video recently of just, it was obviously before all of this isolation stuff, but these guys who had been best friends on, like, I don't know, Xbox Online or PlayStation Online or whatever it was. Like, they'd met playing a video game together and they'd been playing this game together for like 10 years. And then for the first time, like, these guys filmed them meeting each other for the first time. And, you know, like, they hugged and they cried and they did all that sort of stuff. And I was like, that is crazy. That is a relationship that literally started over a mutual love for a video game. And they only ever talked when they were online together. But they just, they did life together in some way. And it was obviously so impacting for them that when they finally met, they were literally brought to tears and, like, were hugging each other, crying, growing, you know, nerd men who just...
Be careful, Ben. Be very careful.
I know. That's why I did it in quotation marks, nerd men, who just, like, obviously connected and felt so impacted by the influence of the other person's life that they desperately wanted to meet each other face to face. So
I totally forgot about that because, there's a couple of games I play online, and one of them, it was a sheer accident. I mean, I am a skillful player, but it was a bit of an accident. We almost made it to the quarterfinals. And if we did, we would have all been flown to Vancouver to play in the finals. But we just joined the competition for the game just for, you know, for a bit of a laugh.
Yeah.
And then at that last sort of qualifying stage, someone in our team said, "Oh, you realize if we win this one, we'll all meet each other for the first time in Vancouver." And we were like, "What?" And we panicked and choked and lost that round. But yeah, I totally forgot about, there's about 10 blokes in our unit, we call it, the game we play. You have units.
Yeah.
And we became really close. I remember one of the guys, he was actually based in Victoria, one of these guys. And he had some really challenging mental health issues in his personal life. I kind of picked that up. And then sometimes, you know, when we would log into the team chat, it would just be he and I, because, you know, time zones and all that sort of stuff. I was able to, you know, achieve a significant degree of intimacy with these guys, even though I've never met them. I don't know what they look like.
Yeah.
So that's another dimension. Probably one of the other things I've been thinking about is you know, now life seems to be, okay, I need to be finished by 10 because I've got another Zoom meeting I need to jump into. I don't know whether this is your experience as well. I'd be interested, but it seems as though, I mean, I'm left to my own devices. I can be pretty task focused. You know, someone will ask me, you know, how are you? And I'm like, good. And then we'll get onto the task at hand, and I'll forget to go, oh, hang on, how are you? What's going on for you? So, I mean, that's almost like an active discipline for me to, you know, leave the task for later. But it seems as though for me, that's kind of, that aspect of the way in which I think, it seems as though everyone is thinking in those ways. It's like, okay, I've got 30 minutes. We've got stuff we need to do.
Yeah.
Is that just me or like, are you?
That's 100% me too. I've got, like, literally last night I was on a message with one of my coworkers who, like, you know, we're coworkers, but we're friends. So, you know, her and I used to work really closely together. And so we're good friends and we still work together, but now I was messaging her. I was like, hey, we should, like, catch up with some of our other coworkers that we normally have lunch with and actually have lunch together and just talk about something that's not work related. Cause I genuinely feel like it is. It's like, I got a meeting from 9 till 10. I got another one from 10 till 11. So I just need to be talking about what I need to talk about in this meeting. We just do the general, how you doing? Yeah, good, great. Okay, so let's jump into what we're talking about. And there's none of that social just connection, those little offhand comments, those little conversations where you just hear about something that's going on in someone's life. Mm. So I definitely have noticed that, that there's not quite that same, I guess connection. It's more about what's the task we have to do together rather than what's the relationship that we have.
Yeah. And in the past, more than once, when I've had, formal and informal feedback given to me, people have said, in that feedback, I feel as though I'm a thing in Stephen's world that he uses.
Yeah.
Which is really painful to hear.
Yeah.
That people, people feel like I can be quite mechanical. And, that those sorts of wounds are great catalysts for change. But what I've really interestingly discovered is during this time, because as I've said, I've had quite a few people contact me and go, that formation stuff, I think I'm starting to understand why that's important now and I want to do it.
Yeah.
Because, for all of the stuff we talked about in the first episode, stuff's coming up for people that like they can't avoid it.
Yeah.
And what I've found is like I'll be chatting to somebody virtually and in my mind I've got a list of things I want to ask them. So I'm in task mode, but I'm thinking I need to and I kind of shocked myself the other day because there's one person in particular who's struggling with some stuff and in my mind I thought I need to find out are they entertaining issues of suicide?
Yeah. Wow.
And so I kind of had a list of questions. Like I was in task mode, but I was in task mode for some highly interpersonal things.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I found I asked the question because it was like, I was looking at my watch. I was walking as I was talking to them. I was looking at my watch and I thought, I know they need to move on to another meeting after this. And I do. Here are the things I actually need to ask them. And I found I was actually a little bit more courageous and a little bit more direct with, so it was almost like that task orientation was redeemed.
Yeah.
And I said, look, if I'm going to be a faithful friend to you in this, I need to ask you these questions. So almost using that, okay, we don't have a lot of time. Let's cut to the chat. We need to talk about the things that matter here. So I'm just wondering whether there's a potential upside in, it's like when people find out, you've only got 2 weeks to live and all of a sudden the things that are important come to the fore and those things are inconsequential. I'm finding a little of that similarly in my conversations as well. So, I don't know. What's your kind of reflection?
No, I do think that there's probably... Yeah, an openness to a bit more directness. It's just everything has a bit more, I guess, focus and deliberate time. Like even if you don't have a paid, Zoom account, you've only got 40 minutes. you've got to get it all done in 40 minutes. I've been in multiple meetings where it's like you're literally watching the timer countdown and everyone's like, okay, do we agree to what's happening right now? We agree. All right, we got 30 seconds left. You're doing this, you're doing that. And everyone's like, cool, cool, cool. And then it like, boom, there goes the meeting.
Yeah.
But there is, I think there's a willingness to like, hey, let's cut through this. Mm. And let's kind of get to the heart of the issue. Mm. But I think the challenge that I'm finding is knowing who are the people that are up for that. Because while there's definitely a willingness to be a bit more direct and hey, we've only got, set amounts of time. It's not like time's a little bit more locked in than it was before where it had a bit of, I guess, fluidity in times.
Yeah, walking to the cafe for our meeting and walking
correct.
Back.
Yeah, yeah. There's none of that. But what I've also found is there's a whole bunch of people who are still sitting in those places and in those meetings who are there almost out of routine or just wanting to, like, stay connected. So I'm, like, thinking of, life groups. And this is just in a bigger sense, not just the one I lead, but the other ones I've been a part of where people are saying to me, we got people in our group who are sitting there on mute with the camera off and they're there, but they're not leaning in any way. Mm. And so I think there's some of these people who are really leaning in where we can have some really great conversation and direct and I guess purposeful conversation. But then we've also got these group dynamics where there's some people who are like, it seems like they're just there so that they can say they were there. People remember their presence, which is, you know, a totally different can to open about how do we help people understand that they're valued and cared for and that we do notice their presence, whether they're with us or not. But yeah, I think it's just, that's probably been one thing that I've been finding quite difficult is how do we be purposeful when you got, you know, people noticing that there's a person in the corner who's sitting there, video off, muted, not seemingly engaging in any way with what's going on.
Yeah, it's not something I've thought about, Ben, because the, you know, the meetings I find myself in, there's a reasonably obvious agenda. So, you know, my Monday night class, it's a class. There's content that we need to get through. And I do get a little bit disturbed when people turn the camera off. I'm like, what are you doing? Because you're like, do you have pants on even?
Is that the problem?
but at the same time, because it, you know, because it is a class, and I write into my unit guides when I'm teaching, part of the assessment is your interaction in class. So, you know, if you submit the best essays, but you've been totally silent during class, I will actually, you know, I reserve the right to then mark you down in your assessment on the basis of interaction. So, and I, you know, as soon as I learnt that, I picked that up from somebody else, that's kind of become my standard practice. So they know, you know, they know that they're going to be checked in on. And and I think, you know, the only way that you help people stop being consumers is teach them how to be contributors. And so this is just me thinking out loud now, right? So in the situation you've described, I wonder whether, see, because, you know, in a class or as a as an employee or you know, as part of your work, you're bound by a different set of commitments. I often, because, again, you would know this because of our friendship, but for most of our adult lives, Lisa and I, we've lived in share house arrangements. You know, before somebody would come to live with us, we would say, this is what we are on about as a house. You know, we get together regularly, we check in with each other. We're kind of committed to making the world a better place. So it's not just a place where you live and eat. It's also, you know, and I've known that people have heard those stories, you know, when I talk about, you know, my public speaking, my teaching work, I talk about what we do. And then people go, I want to live in a house, you know, a share house with purpose like that as well. So then they go back to the people who have already moved in. You know, they were offered a room to rent and, you know, pitching in with some of the chores, covering the bed. Like that was what they signed up to. And then, you know, these wacky idealistic, you know, people have just come back from a conference or a seminar. In a house, and the people in the house are going, but that's not what we signed up for. You can't change the contract after people have signed the contract and moved in. So that's one of the challenges you have, but I wonder whether, but you can propose we're going to change the contract, and how do you do that without people feeling like you're singling them out or having a go at them? But but if there is some way to actually, you know, to precipitate a conversation around those sorts of things. You know, well, why are we here? Why are we bothering doing this? Why don't we just cancel this and reconvene when we can meet face to face? What is so, and you know, that might be a way to change the rules of engagement. I wouldn't suggest you be as direct as this, right? But you know, if you sit in a meeting with your microphone off and your video off, well, why bother? Like, what need is that meeting for you? And you need to, again, you know, I think one of the biggest challenges is helping people realize that we are disciples of economics. We're disciples of a particular economic system.
Mm.
And one of the big challenges is helping people realize that and transform that. Because in many respects, that might be the answer. Well, the reason I'm here is because I'm basically going to, I mean, it's our lives. Do you know what I mean? I remember reading a study about people whose primary place of work was home. This is before COVID, right?
Yeah.
But the primary place of work was home. So that included, you know, people who work from home, but also people whose, you know, domestic duties is kind of like their primary thing. If they watched a regular soap opera, anything from, you know, Days of Our Lives through to Big Bang Theory.
Yeah.
If they were watching a soap opera regularly, two or three times a week, their mental health was greater. Like they had a much more robust sense of mental health than if they did not, because they were participating in community life. They were participating in the ups and downs.
Wow.
They became their friends. You know, they went through the emotional ups and downs of life of
these
people that they were engaging with. Yeah, so wow, and on so many levels. Wow, that's amazing. Wow, how sad.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the reason those things exist is for the ads in between.
Totally.
You know, it's so, you know, right from the very get-go, we are discipled into late-stage capitalism. That is what forms us. So, you know, people who do check into a meeting with the microphone and the video off, they're excellent disciples. Oh, one of the things I wanted to say in the previous episode about discipline, is one of the big, you know, people are like, I don't know if I can do this. I don't know if I can be disciplined.
Mm.
And I say to people, everyone in this room is highly disciplined.
Yeah.
We just need to figure out what it is you're trying to achieve in life. And I'll show you the, you know, so people are like, but I procrastinate so much. And I say, well, that's because your goal is avoiding conflict or avoiding this or avoiding that. You are highly disciplined at achieving that goal.
Yeah.
And the pain of discipline is not so much starting a new discipline, picking something up. The pain when it comes to, you know, practicing spiritual discipline is I already do a whole bunch of things and I can't fit more in my life. I've got to stop doing something in order to pick up something. That's the pain of discipline.
Yeah,
having to say no to other things. And similarly in this scenario that we're talking about, re-engaging people. Yeah, well, why are you here? And again, I wouldn't be as direct or as impassioned as I am, unless you've got a reasonably robust relationship.
Yeah.
But why bother? Why check in and not be seen and not be heard? And of course, you know, you and I, we've been around formation and we've been around youth and young adult ministry long enough to know there are some probably really good answers to that question.
Yeah, definitely.
Why they don't want to be seen and why they don't want to be heard.
Yeah.
But this fundamental part of our humanity that needs to belong.
Yeah.
There's actually potentially some really exciting possibility to do that work. Because think about it, right? They have a mechanical means to not be seen and not be heard. But in an actual real life, you know, pre and post COVID life, they're in the group, they're being seen and they're being heard, but they're still practicing whatever it was that meant they felt like, even though I'm here physically, I'm still not being seen and I'm still not being heard.
Yeah.
So there's a really exciting, you know, again, I think you've been around me long enough to have heard me do this. You know, when I'm doing something in a seminar or a class or something, I'm like, you know, think about the most painful thing, you know, the most embarrassing, the most painful, most shameful thing. Now turn to the person next to you and have a chat about that.
Yeah.
Talk to a complete stranger about, you know, this really painful thing that you've never talked to another human being about in your whole life. So that's, I think that's exciting.
Yeah.
So when I say exciting, hear me in my morbid, you know, gallows humor sort of. But yeah, I think there are some really exciting opportunities to explore some of this stuff because the signs are so blunt and so obvious. My camera is off, my microphone is off. That's just me thinking out loud again.
No, that's exactly what I was thinking. There was one thing that you said where it was like, people are consuming, but we've got to teach them to contribute. And I was just reflecting on that quote. And I think contribution is a key part of our formation. Like, it's easy to sit there and read some books about how to be formed, but like consuming that knowledge doesn't actually really form you until you, you know, you're contributing in some capacity, and all of a sudden you find, you know, your contribution, like, you know, you said earlier, people are going, I just feel like I'm, you know, a piece in, you know, Stephen's world that he's trying to create. And you go, okay, that was me contributing, trying to do something. And now it's caused a formation opportunity. Do I choose to stay the same way, or do I choose to be formed differently? And I think that's probably, that's been one of my takeaways from this, is how do I get people to this place of wanting to contribute? Because that's the place where I think they're going to be invited to be formed more intentionally, rather than just sit there and go, great, I learnt a few things from being in that life group, or I learnt a few things from being in that class, but I didn't actually get, you know, transformational change or formation come out of it.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember, again, you know, a dear friend of ours, Rowan Lewis, assessment drives learning. So, you know, I don't know if you've ever had to, you know, do some teaching in a formal context. The question I hate, well, I used to hate it. The question I hated the most is this on the exam?
Yeah.
And Rowan said to me, well, if you want people to learn it, put it on the exam. And I was like, oh. So that's when my assignments started radically changing. You know, spend 10 minutes a day in silence and reflect, and then journal that experience. So it's actually, I'm now assessing it. The thing I want you to do. I'm actually assessing. It reminds me of a time, at least when I ran a church for a few years, and using that very concept, you know, assessment drives learning. We're off the topic, but it's a good story. Assessment drives learning. So that very statement, and we wanted our church to be about mission. So, you know, people actually participating in their neighborhoods, in their streets kind of thing. So we did this thing. We put it in our liturgy, and every church has their liturgy, even the non-liturgical churches. You know, give me 5 minutes in your church service and I'll tell you what your liturgy is, your habits, your practices. So this element in our liturgy, and it was, you know, turn to the person next to you and discuss with them how you participated in the coming of the kingdom of God this week. And I remember this family started coming along, and their first experience was, you know, being asked that question and having to turn to somebody. And I remember them telling the story, oh, you know, we kind of fumbled our way through the, you know, through the conversation. I thought, whew, you know, I think we dodged a bullet there. And then they said the next time they came back, they got asked the same question again, and they went, oh, bugger, they're going to ask us this every week. So they thought, I don't want to sit here fumbling and lying my way through a conversation. And it changed their behavior, and they ended up, you know, running a bit of a, you know, a veggie co-op in their street. And I mean, that's a whole nother story for another day.
Yeah, totally.
But, you know, the fact that I'm going to be asked this question regularly, you know, I don't want to sit here and make excuses.
So. Yeah, yeah.
So there could be, I mean, this could be a great opportunity to renegotiate the basis of your covenant, you know, the commitment, the reason why you're getting together.
Yeah. No, that's good. I think that's a great way to kind of frame this conversation, is that actually there's an opportunity to, like you said, maybe renegotiate some terms, even just like you just said then, even just what are the questions that you're asking in those groups, you know? Like actually being a bit more intentional about what are the questions that you're asking? Like, I think in my youth context, I go, I hope all my leaders are genuinely asking, hey, how's everyone doing? What's been going on in your life this week? In the sense of, we want to hear, like, you know, in youth ministry, we call it the highs and the lows, because we want to hear what's the great things that we can celebrate with you, but also what are the hard things that we need to journey with you through? And I actually think, what are the questions that we could, you know, be bringing in this time that could renegotiate the terms of the contract, so that when, you know, we go back, you know, post COVID and we're meeting together face to face, actually there's some new questions, new rhythms to those groups and into those relationships that we find ourselves in.
At the risk of doing a three-point sermon,
yeah,
I remember when I first when I first became a Christian and they talked about three-point, like it was pretty obvious the formula was a three-point sermon, and I just went, I don't think like that. And I thought, I'm never going to be a preacher. I can't do it 3 points, you know. And then at the, you know, during that sort of decade, there was a shift in narrative theology, and I'm like, oh man, I'm a wog. I can tell a story.
Yeah, yeah.
And so all of a sudden, my personality became the mode of preaching.
Yeah.
You beauty. And I remember this interim I'm doing at St Kilda Baptist. I remember I was preaching one morning, and I got to the end of, like, I got to my last point, and I realized it was my third point. And in the middle of the sermon, I'm like, oh my God, I'm doing a 3-point sermon. And I wasn't trying to be funny. Everyone thought it was hilarious, but I was like, oh my God, I'm doing it, you know.
Look 20, at me.
25 years of public speaking, and I finally nailed the 3-point sermon. The third thing I thought of when I was reflecting upon this question, and it sort of builds on the back of the previous point, you know, we've only got an hour or we've only got 45 minutes, you know. But what I've tried to do is I've tried to incorporate, you know, if I need to do exercise, if I need to go for a bike, you know, because I assume the restrictions are the same in Queensland. There's only kind of four reasons why you're allowed to be out.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, essential work, or, you know, you can't work any other way. You know, supplies, exercise, and there's another one. I forget what the other one is.
Yeah, I think it's like health stuff. Like healthcare,
yeah. So, so I've been saying to people, let's go for a walk together, let's exercise together, because we're allowed to be out,
yeah.
And there's almost, so we do have a little bit of a. I want to be really careful here, because we're not supposed to be meeting face to face, but we do need to be exercising. There actually is still an opportunity to be face to face, albeit with, you know, at least 2 meters between you.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's also, and I, like, I'm not sure what your experience is like in Queensland, but like, we know if you drive down certain roads, you'll be stopped by police. Like, they actually have police roadblocks in Victoria in different places.
Oh, wow. No, we don't have that.
Well, you guys are Queensland. It's the Wild West up there.
Yeah, that's right.
So, like, it's not a police state, but, like, you know, I know that there are two or three places,
yeah,
you know, where they'll do that regularly. It's normally between, like, the major shopping centres, like the kind of bottlenecks leading into major shopping centres.
Oh, of course, yeah.
So you know that you could actually be pulled up and asked, you know, what are you doing out?
Mm.
So there is a sense of, well, like, we do need to have a sense of purpose. We need to have a reason. And, you know, we can say because we're exercising.
Yeah.
But you know, to sort of run that risk, it's like, well, why are we going to be going for a walk and having this conversation? So I'm finding that using those times when I'm kind of going for a walk, and also, you know, if there are people who are in a situation like myself, so I'm here at home with my three kids, so yeah, there's five of us. You can't have those, you know, personal interactions with people. So I'll either physically go for a walk with people, or I'll let Lisa know, like, I'll make sure I'm not going to interrupt her work, because, you know, if I leave, it's not like she's working in the, like, all of a sudden she becomes the full-time teacher.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
So, you know, all of that being a given, if she's like, yeah, that's fine. And normally it's like, and how long are you going to be?
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
So, yeah, I say to people at the other end, look, you know, why don't you do your exercise now? I'll do my exercise now, and let's talk. And I just,
yeah,
pop my headphones on, and I can't do that and ride my bike, because I can only do one thing at a time. So
yeah, yeah. Walking's a bit easier.
Yeah. Well, you know, for most people, I still find, you know, I'm a little bit challenged. Yeah. So.
No, that's good.
And, you know, they know that they might be stopped by somebody and asked what they're doing out. And so there is a sense of, there's a heightened sense of purpose in our in our interaction, but I'm also mindful, Ben, that everything I've talked about infers or implies a pre-existing relationship.
Yeah.
So I want to be honest and flag that. And then, I mean, the other the other thing is something that you mentioned before we decided to pull the trigger on this podcast was what do you do with people under the age of 18 and the whole, you know, child safe, you know, all that sort of stuff. Because let's be honest, to not put it too fine a point on it, this is a stalker's paradise at the moment. You know, young people more vulnerable than ever before. You know, particularly those who are craving connection. I mean, this is a recipe for disaster. So that's something I've been trying to give a lot of thought to as well. And I'd be really interested to hear, you know, your reflections on that. Because like I said, everything I've said, I don't do a whole lot of stuff with people under the age of 18.
No, I think the principles still apply. I think in terms of trying to get people to contribute is important. I think some of the questions that we ask are really critical. And I think I really liked what you said about maybe looking for some of those signs, you know, those people who are joining who are, you know, mute or with no video on and going, okay, they feel like maybe they're not seen or heard. How can we change the narrative for them in that? So I think there's a lot of that, but I also reckon just that purposefulness about this time. I think there's this, I don't know, there's a sense sometimes I think that we can't get deep digitally, but particularly with young people, I think we can. Like I said, there's lots of young people who have friendships, you know, that are completely digital, where they would tell some of those people more than they'd tell some of their, you know, in life, you know, real life friends. So I think we don't need to shy away from that and that willingness for, particularly I'm thinking the young people to be deep digitally, if we're willing to go there ourselves, I think is obviously the other prerequisite. But I'm the same as you. I'm putting a lot of this on pre-existing relationships. You know, I'm thinking of, you know, youth ministry where you know all these kids and they've potentially been in your life group for even just a few months. So you've got a bit of pre-existing relationship. You know, that space.
Yeah, look, I wasn't planning on mentioning this, but there's a church run by a fella I know, and he said he's been the minister there for about 5 years, and he's a big fan of, you know, transformation happens in small groups, you know. And they're a big church, and he said, like, the 5 years he's been there, like, they've been able to start maybe two or three small groups. Like, they've really struggled to do that. During COVID, when I was telling this story a couple of weeks ago, during COVID, they've started 9 small groups.
Oh, wow.
And when I spoke to one of the other pastors there about something, because we were sort of chatting about, you know, people who don't have access to phones and internet access, I think they're up to 14. They've started 14 small groups.
Wow.
And I said, how did you do that? And I was sort of chatting through the detail with them. And basically they had like a whole bunch of people who didn't have regular internet access, didn't have, you know, decent devices. They knew that, you know, just go digital as a church, you know, just go online. Yeah. They just knew that there was a significant chunk of people who were not going to be able to participate. And I thought, okay, they wanted to talk to all of these people about, you know, do you want to be in a small group? And I thought the volume of people, it was too much. Like, they weren't going to have enough time. It would have taken them weeks. So they said, we just, without telling them, we just put them in groups. We just, you know, we had a guess as to who might have a pastoral heart. That's their language. So they knew the people well enough to know they might actually make a really good small group leader. So they picked their leaders, in inverted commas, and then they allocated groups, and then they just rang those leaders and said, here's a list of names, and here are the questions we want you to ask them.
Yeah.
And they said, we knew that, you know, because, you know, land of the, you know, we are young and free in Australia.
Yeah.
That's another story for another day. Don't tell us what to do, you know. We're Aussies, don't tell us what to do. They knew that there could be some potential backlash, but they said the worst thing that could happen was somebody on one of those lists would ring up one of the pastoral staff and say, somebody rang me up and asked me how I was going.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I said, that's the worst thing that could happen. And they said, we were just prepared to run that risk. So all of a sudden, people who never thought of and were never engaged to consider, you know, a pastoral vocation,
yeah,
were just told, you need to do this. And they said only one person came back and asked if they could not do that anymore as a leader. And the basis was they just felt really overwhelmed by the stories that they were hearing. They just didn't feel emotionally as though they could cope. They certainly had the skills and the competency, but they just didn't feel like they had the internal emotional resilience to do that. So So it's crazy. And then, of course, you know, the fella who leads the church, he's a mate of mine, just thinking, I don't want to go back. You know, once we can meet together once again, I don't want to go back to where we have this big chunk of people who are not in small groups, who don't want to participate in that way. I want to continue, you know, this way of, you know, being the people of God in this time and in this place. So,
yeah. It's a challenge, that's for sure. There's definitely some good things happening in the midst of all of this, though.
Yeah. So, yeah, this was really, you know, this episode was really just me musing and thinking out loud. Not necessarily, you know, here's what you could or you should do, but just here are some hunches I have. And, you know, as a good friend of mine said, oh, you know, Stephen, you never met a hunch that you didn't like.
Yeah. But no, I think that's what this season is. I think it's a lot of people having conversations about some hunches and some feels that they've got about what's happening and what's going on. And look, hopefully this has been helpful for people listening, even if it's just sparked some thoughts or some questions or some things that you know, might potentially be going to run through with people that you lead with or the people that you're leading. But I think it is really important for us to continue to wrestle through what does it look like for us to do, you know, digital discipleship in this season, because it really is the major vehicle that we've got. So we've got to figure out how to use it to not let this be a time where we just try and create something fun and engaging and people can consume, but actually where we're still trying to facilitate life and transformation. So look, it's been great to chat today, Stephen, and appreciate your musings and and I'm sure they've been helpful. Like, I've definitely got a couple of things that I'm going to be taking away and trying to implement where I lead, and hopefully that's the case for those who have been listening here as well. But other than that, thank you everyone for listening. Thanks, Stephen, for your time today, and we'll catch you on our next episode soon. But have a fantastic day, everyone. See you later.
See you guys.